Okay, continue. Is she left?
Shifty's not here.
Oh, Shifty's no, not here yet. If she's fine, I don't know. Finish off the sentence. Behind every successful man is?
A woman pushing.
Okay, or? Okay.
Cute.
What else?
Shadow.
Uh-huh. The other famous ways that you've heard of the phrase being finished off, behind every successful man is a woman that pushes or?
Encourage.
Helps.
Okay.
Helps.
Okay. So the rabbis asked a question. We can just jump right in over here. You know, we're all, I give everybody a tremendous amount of encouragement and yashar koach and commendation for coming here this evening on an Erev Chag, the night before a holiday of Sukkot. Like, difficult to Shavuot. Thank you. I'm ready for Sukkot. It's easier to cook for Sukkot, you know. It's easier to make plaisig than not cook. But it is. To make it nice
really
for Yom Kippur
on the second day.
No. What? Right? Milchig?
No.
I don't know. I like, we have milchig.
Milchig is more expensive that you have nothing to eat.
Plaisig is more expensive.
Yeah, but
milchig is hard to come up with nice things. But I give you all.
Especially if your mother
thank you. Yes. Makes sense. We're looking forward to it. So let's jump right in, and we have source number one. I'm sorry, I was in a bit of a rush and didn't put in so much English, but I'll explain as we go along. The source number one is in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, and God tells the Jewish people, get ready, make the lamb, sacrifice the lamb, and we're going to go out. And once you do this, once you sacrifice the lamb, put the blood on your doorpost, he says, V'avar Hashem lingof et Mitzrayim, God will go over. He will come by to plague the Egypt. He will see the blood on the lintel and the top part of the, on the door jamb and on both sides. And God will pass over your opening of your house, and he won't allow the destructive angel to come into your houses to harm. And the commentaries ask the question, why? Like, what is it about the Jewish people that made God feel that this was something special that he wanted to do? What did they do that merited this? They had to, this had to be a reward for something, because the commentaries very often deal in this kind of thing, reward and punishment. If this good thing happened, it's because someone did something good. If a bad thing happened, it's because someone did something bad. Now, we know things aren't really in real life so black and white. We wish that they were. Things would be a lot easier. But the commentaries look at this, and the Kli Yakar gives us three very interesting possibilities. In source number two, why not, he says, Gimel Banasora. The Midrash tells us three answers, three reasons. Hacha v'idach v'lo yitein alaha levona gabe chatat. The first reason he gives is because the Jewish people brought korbanot, like sacrifices, because they were willing to do this difficult thing, to kill these animals, which could possibly seem as a barbaric act, and to do this for God, to put aside their discomfort. Because of that, that's why they were saved from Mitzrayim, number one. Number two, and skipping to the end of the third long line, Shabishchut Nashim Tidkaniyot Yatsu Misham. And the second possibility is because of the zechut, because of the merit of the women. Something that the women did that was very special and unique, that because of that, they left Mitzrayim. And he gives a third reason later on that I didn't bring you. I guess I forgot to put it in. The third reason is because they did the two mitzvot that were commanded immediately before this, which is the mitzvah of Pesach and the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Because the Jewish people kept those particular mitzvot at that time, that's why they were passed over and allowed to leave Mitzrayim and given the privilege of Mitzrayim. So there's three types of things that are happening. Either that the Jewish people are merited for something that they are about to do in the future, or they're being merited for something they've done in the past, or that it's not just the Jewish people, but a particular group in the Jewish people, the Jewish women. Now, this is very unusual, because as you might have noticed, Chazal don't always present with us with the most positive view of women. Now, we have come through this class, and I've tried to show you positive ways to look at the Imahot and to look at different women, but very often we've taken a midrash that seems at first glance negative, and we have to try to make it into something positive. Chazal doesn't always say such great things about women. For instance, the midrash that we did about what part of Adam to create woman from. Oh, not from the mouth, so she won't be a speaker, and not from her head, so she won't be too proud, and all this kinds of stuff. And the midrash goes on to say then that, well, you know, mensch tracht und Gott lacht, that man tries to do what he can. Well, it's opposite that way, but that God tried very hard not to make a woman a gossip monger, not to make her a haughty woman, but oh well, he failed. Even though he took her from a hidden part, it didn't work. You know, that's the end of the midrash. So the Chazal isn't always very positive, and it's sometimes very hard for us to try to weed out the positive from there. But here, they come straight out and say, because of the women tikaniyot, because the women who behaved in an unbelievably righteous, particularly special way, that's why the entire Jewish nation, that is why we are here today. Because without a doubt, if the Jewish people had not been taken out of Mitzrayim, there would be no Jewish people today. They would assimilate, they would intermarry, boom, forget it. They were so close. That's what would have been. So Rabbi Akiva tells us in source number 3, an unbelievable thing. What was it that they actually did? Bishchar nashim titaniot, in the merit of the righteous women, shayu b'otol hador, in that particular generation, nigalu Yisrael mimitayim, the Jewish people were exiled from Egypt. Redeemed from Egypt. Uma'asu, what did they do? At the time when they would go to draw water from the river, God invited all the small little fish to come gather around and come end up in their pails. They would draw, instead of a pail mostly with water with a few little fish, God made a particular case so that when they drew their water, it was half filled with fish. Now, you remember, this is in terrible, terrible working conditions from the Mitzrayim. They're not getting any food, almost. And here, God is giving them this opportunity to have some food. And what do they do with this food? Umolichot etzobayalehem. They bring these fish to their husbands who are working in the field. V'shoftot lahem shtei kedevot. And they put two pots on the fire. Achat shel chamin v'achat shel dagim. One of hot water and one for fish. Umachilototam, they feed them the fish. Umachitototam, and they wash the men who are working very, very hard. They wash them with the warm water. Vesachorotam, and they rub them with oils. Umashkorotam, and they give them to drink. Veniskakot lahem ben shvatayim, they cohabit with them between the mounds and the fields. Shanaamar, as the Pasuk in Tehillim explains, Im tishkevun ben shvatayim, when you lay down between the mounds and the fields, Knafei yonan nachfa bakashef, at that point, the wings of the dove were covered with silver. Because this chash shachvu ben shvatayim, because they did this activity, because they took care of the situation, zachu Yisrael levizat mitzrayim. Because of this, the Jewish people, because of what the women did, the Jewish people merited taking all the money and the silver and the gold out of Mitzrayim, as the second half of the pasuk that we just read says, shenamar kanfei yonan nachfa bakashef. What does it mean that when, because you lay down in the fields between the mounds of dirt, then the dove's wings were covered with silver? That's an allusion to the Jewish people being able to take all this riches out of Mitzrayim. V'kevan she'mitabrot ba'ot levateihem, when they became pregnant, they came home. V'kevan she'higia zman molideihem hochot v'yoldot basadeh tachat ha'tapuach. And when it was time for them to give birth, they went out into the field and gave birth under the apple tree. Shana Amar, as it says in Shir HaShirim, Tachat HaTapuch or Artich, I aroused you under the apple tree. Akadosh Baruch Hu, what happened at that time? Akadosh Baruch Hu Sholeach Ma'ach Mishmei Marom. God sends an angel down from heaven, Umenakotam, Umeshapelotam, and this angel would clean them and cleanse these babies, Kechaya Zosha Meshapelot Ad Hablad, like the midwife would do, that we learned about last week. Shanaamar, as it says in Yecheskel, Yecheskel has this image of a woman, of a young woman, that's parallel to the Jewish people's experiences coming out of Mitzrayim, and we read actually part of his image at the Shadar table, so some of this might sound familiar to you. The Gomer, etc. He doesn't quote the whole pasuk here, but he says, on the day that you were born, your navel wasn't cut, you weren't washed in clean water, you weren't taken care of by a person the way a regular newborn baby is taken care of. How are they taken care of? God sent this particular special angel to take care of them. Umenaket lahem shnei agulim. And this angel provided these babies with two cakes, echad shel shemen v'echad shel dvash, one of oil and one of honey. Shanama, as the pasuk says, in Devarim, v'enikehu dvash misela, and I nursed you with the honey from Iraq. V'kevan shemakirim behen ha-mitzviyim, when the mitzviyim saw what was happening. If you remember last week, Paro saw that the Jewish people were multiplying and multiplying against his decree. And he wanted to kill them. Ratzu l'hagam, they wanted to kill the Jewish people and kill these babies. Menaseh l'hanes, a miracle was made for these babies. The nivla'im b'karka, they got swallowed up in the ground. Umevi'in shvarim v'chorshim al gabehem. And the parents and the men, particularly the fathers of these children, would then take plows and plow the land. So imagine you have a lookout who's saying, the Mitzrayim are coming, the Mitzrayim are coming. These babies would get swallowed up by the ground. And the fathers would just sort of walk along and plow over the earth. And the Mitzrayim would think that nothing's going on. Ulachar shehochin, when the Mitzrayim then would leave, mevach the tzin v'yotzin ke'esev hashadzah. At that point, these babies would pop out of the ground and spring up like grass. The Kevan Shemishadlin, when they grew up, in Adrim Bevateyam, they would come in flocks and droves to their houses, and there are all these tzukim to quote it. Ukshenigla Kadosh Baruch Hu al Hayam Hem Hikiru Tchilash, and that's my Zekhe Livan Behu. When the Jewish people came to the Red Sea, to the Yam Suf, and they actually saw the Yam Suf split, the Torah tells us that Jewish people pointed and said, Zekhe Livan Behu, this is my God, and I will glorify him. Who were the first ones who said it? Says the Midrash, these babies, these children who were nurtured by God himself. But it was only because of the foresight of the woman and the perseverance of the woman that when their husbands were tired and when the day was long and when the morale was not only low but non-existent, they went into the fields and they brought them food and they prepared it for them and they washed them and they did what was necessary to ensure the future of the Jewish people. That's why, because of what they did, because of the self-sacrifices that they made here, that's why the Jewish people were able to leave Mitzrayim. That's what source number 3 says. Shemot Rabbah. Excuse me.
Okay, questions, comments? Who was this?
This is the Midrash Rabbah quoting Rabbi Akiva. We could talk a little bit about Rabbi Akiva. I always
like
to.
What?
He had a very good
imagination.
We could talk about
Midrash
too. We could talk about Midrash too. I just bought a book called Learning to Read Midrash. I'm not up to that part yet, where she says, what do you do with these fantastical Midrashim? Right. But the point is, I think that what I take away from this Midrash like this, again, is not necessarily did it happen exactly like this. It's possible. It's definitely possible. God can do anything he wants. If he can split a sea, he can do anything. If he can create a world, he could do anything. But I think what the Midrash means to us is that here the women took the initiative to make a difficult situation as bearable as possible, and God helped them along and made sure that it was, that it worked.
It's the nature of a woman to do
properly. What's that?
It's the nature of a woman.
Yes. Well, that's part of my point here. Tonight. Okay. So these women then have a similar kind. Do you have a watch? I don't have a watch. I lost it. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Nobody's taking my watch. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. All right. We have another situation in the Midbar. Any other things that you know of the women in the Midbar? How they behaved? What they were like? Okay. We know this is like an amazing, incredible, unbelievable thing what
they
did. That was in Mitzrayim. It was back in
the
time.
They didn't give up their jewelry for the...
So that's source number 4 and 5.
Yeah.
That's source number 4 and 5. Source number 4, Vayomer Aleihem Aaron. Imagine the scene. Aaron is being attacked by the Jewish people. Moses isn't here. He's late. Rashi says he was 6 hours late. We all know what it's like when you're waiting for somebody and it's 6 hours late. And here, what were they waiting for? They're waiting for Moses to tell them, what was going to be with the rest of their lives. Why did they leave Mitzrayim? Why did they leave the life that, all as difficult and horrible as it was the only life that they knew? And what is their purpose going to be from here on in? They're waiting for him, waiting for him. Rashi says he's 6 hours late. They attack Aaron. I'm sure many of you have seen the movie. They attack Aaron. Like, we need something else. We need a replacement. We need something. Aaron is thinking, like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? This is a really bad situation. I cannot let it get out of hand. But there is the mob mentality that things just sort of get out of control. How can I control it as much as possible? So he says to them, "Bayomer aleihem Aaron." He says to them, "Parkunis meha zahav asher bozne neshechem banechem uvnotechem v'haviu elai." Take off the rings, the nose rings that are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. And what do they do? Vayitzparku kol ha'amet mizmeha zahav asher bozneihem. The entire nation took off the earrings that were in their ears. Vayavou hayaviu el Aaron, and they brought them to Aaron. What did he tell them to do? What did they actually do?
He told them to bring from their wives.
From their wives, their sons, and their daughters.
They brought their own.
They brought their own. And Rashi picks up on this change in what he told them to do and what they actually did. It's a subtle change, but he picks up on it in source number 5. Amar Aaron b'libo. Aaron said in his heart, okay. Women and children really take care of their jewelry. They feel very close to it. So if I tell them that they should go take it from their wives and their children, they're not going to give it up quite so easily. There's going to be some fighting back and forth. So in the meantime, I'm stalling for time, and hopefully in the meantime, Moshe will come back. They didn't wait. Ben Israel so badly wanted to have a replacement for Moshe that they said, forget it. They tried to their wives, or they maybe even didn't try to their wives because they knew that the wives would never give up their jewelry for something so ridiculous and passion-driven and not rational as this and making no sense and having no end goal. So they took from themselves and they brought it. And did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. The Midrash then, source number 6, says an unbelievable thing with this. When the women came to remove their wives' gold earrings for the golden calf, the women refused to hand them over. They said to the husbands, "We will not obey you in order to make an abomination which has no power to save." God rewarded them in this world in giving them a greater degree of observance on Rosh Chodesh, and he rewards them in the world to come in giving them the power of constant renewal, which characterized Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is what we call a Chag Hashem. Some of you may have occasionally seen signs around wherever with special Rosh Chodesh program for women. Or you just know, like, I think Machon does a, Uniquely Ours, is it? I think, who does a Rosh Chodesh program for women. I don't know what it's actually called, the group that does it. I know it's associated with Machon, do a Rosh Chodesh program for women. Why are we so focused on doing a Rosh Chodesh program for women? Because Rosh Chodesh is a Chag Hashem. It's a holiday for women. The halacha tells us that Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed are very similar to each other. Unlike regular Chagim and regular Shabbos, you're allowed to do malacha on those days. You're allowed to do what's considered work. Something that's forbidden on Yom Tov is permitted on Rosh Chodesh. For example, laundry is forbidden on Yom Tov. To do laundry is permitted on Rosh Chodesh. However, the halacha adds, not for women. Women that are customary by women to not do those kinds of things, to not do laundry. I don't know what else.
Special clothes like you do on Shabbos.
Many people do, but
yes.
Particularly women. Women will often. Yeah. So women will often make it a point to get together on Rosh Chodesh to do something special.
We go out to lunch, a group of us.
Okay.
Go out to lunch on Rosh Chodesh.
That's wonderful. No matter what day of the week it is.
I do every kind of work, but I don't do laundry.
Okay. It's hard to think of other things. That's like a big one that's very clear, you know. But, yeah, I used to also not make dinner on Rosh Chodesh. But Rosh Chodesh, we went out a long time ago. Pre-Sugar Master.
It's like
sure.
A long time.
Yeah, it is a long time ago. Yeah, so Rosh Chodesh is something that has become because of this. Okay, so here's my challenge question of the evening. What's the connection? We didn't give our gold, so we get Rosh Chodesh. Of all things, There has to be a connection, right? What do you think? You knew there'd be a thinking question in here somewhere.
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Let's get some good answers.
Let's come up with some good answers together. What do you think?
What says the power of constant renewal, which characterizes Rosh Chodesh, which is the same as like a woman's monthly cycle. Like, women are very tied to the moon in a lot of ways.
Okay.
They probably often go crazy, but there's a lot of
yin yang.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how to put it in normal terms, but there's a lot of relationship between the cycle of the moon and the cycle of women, and you know, and relationships and total behaviors and things that are tied to the moon. If you believe that.
Okay. But then it would seem natural that women would get the Rosh Chodesh as a chag for them, but why specifically as a reward for this particular act of trying to stop the Chet HaEgel? Now that we've determined why Rosh Chodesh is appropriately unique for women, why is it an appropriate reward? I don't have an answer. I'm throwing it out to you. I want to know what you think.
Maybe because the Chet HaEgel could have been the end of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been, you know.
It almost was the end of everything.
Mm-hmm. But he could have said, forget it.
He did. He did get so angry and say, forget it.
But I mean, in the end, could have just said, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Could have given this over.
But it also, you know, in our Torah, we stress the community,
mm-hmm.
not the individual. It's okay. Always the community. And maybe this is a way of showing us the importance of the community, of everybody together.
Helping that for other people. Why particularly the women?
How about
the community?
Well, the women are the strength of the community.
But why should they be picked up?
They help out in the community.
But then how is Rosh Chodesh?
Okay.
So now we connect the Rosh Chodesh to women. We connected Chet HaEgel, or stopping Chet HaEgel, to women. Now let's bridge that gap and connect Chet HaEgel with Rosh Chodesh. There has to be a connection. There are connections to everything. This is what we're good at. This is the Bina Yetera, making connections, right?
Why do you call this chain reactions?
It was a mistake. It really should have been because of the woman.
Oh, I don't get the chain reactions.
Well, women cause things to happen. That was the title I was playing with. It's my weakness is I can't come up with good titles.
Something really?
Yeah, no, not really. It was supposed to be good.
With the gold chains.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you
okay.
go.
The
there
chain.
You go, the gold chains.
But they didn't give up.
Okay. There has to be a connection between Chet HaEgel and Rosh Chodesh. Chet HaEgel, God was going to stop the Jewish people altogether, maybe, and this is constant renewal. Women saw the future. Anything else?
Because women are stronger than men.
Okay, in what way?
Everything.
Right.
That was the original title, was Strong Women.
That would have been good. I like that.
Yeah, but that's now my title. It's been better with tomorrow night. No, with tomorrow night's class.
You're smarter, too.
And much more modest, of course.
Yeah, of course. Okay, we have another incident of the women showing up in the Midbar in the forming of the Mishkan itself. The Mishkan has, as you're familiar with probably, is a big long tent that has a lot of stuff inside and a couple things outside and a little chamber inside with the Aron in it. And the whole thing is surrounded by these beautiful fur curtains. And in source number 7, we see that one of the things that shows up inside is what we call the kiyor. It's the washing basin that the Levim wash their hands. They wash the hands of the Kohanim and the feet to prepare them for spiritual purity for the work that they're going to do in the Mishkan. The entire kiyor is supposed to be made from nechoshet, from copper. Bimarot Hatzvaot Asher Tavu Petach Ohel Moed. With the mirrors of the servers, of the female servers, that's the feminine form of those who serve. And Rashi's like, okay, hello, who are these servers? What are mirrors doing here? And he tells us a beautiful, beautiful story. Again, in source number 8. B'mar'ot ha'tzov'ot. B'no'ot Yisrael hayu b'yadan mar'ot. The women of Israel had in their possession these mirrors, shera'ot b'hen k'shehen mitkashtot. That they would look in the mirrors when they were putting on jewelry, makeup, whatever. Even those, they decided, they felt they wanted to give to the Mishkan. Now, you know how close a woman is with her compact. You know, many women carry compacts in their purses all the time and look in the mirror, and it's something very important. And he's saying, even that, they didn't hold back. Something that's so dear and so important to them, they didn't hold back from giving to the Mishkan as a gift. Moshe's like, hello, this does not belong in the Mishkan. Mishkan is purely spiritual. This is a purely physical thing. They're made for the evil inclination, for your material side. Amalo Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Kabel, accept them. Ki elu chavivim alai min hakol. These mirrors are more special to me than anything else. Through these mirrors, the women set up many, many, many people in the Mitzrayim, many hosts. When their husbands were worn out from this terrible, difficult work, they would go and bring them food and drink. They would give them what to eat. They would take these mirrors. They would hold it up so they would look, both of them look at the same time in the mirror. They would see each other in the mirror. She would entice them with words, saying, I'm more beautiful than you. They'd flirt with each other a little bit. And through this, she would bring their husbands to desire, and they would be together, and they would conceive and have children there. But I raised you under the apple tree. This is what we're talking about, the mirrors of the serving women. The kior is made from these mirrors. That the women are bringing these mirrors, and Moshe says, that's disgusting, that's terrible, that's so materialistic. And God says, no. These mirrors are what ensure the future of the Jewish people. Similar to the Midrash we said before, same theme, with a different twist, because of the mirrors, because of the fits are very nice here. But it takes a step further. What is the kior used for? The waters of the kior is used for something else other than cleansing the Kohanim's hands and feet. The waters of the kior is the water that's used, that's given to the Isha Sotah, to the suspected adulteress. Let me give you a moment, the situation of the suspected adulteress. A woman who a husband has reason to suspect her of being an adulteress. He has warned her repeatedly in front of witnesses not to be alone with a specific man. She is seen by two witnesses going into a secluded place with that specific man. They stay inside for the amount of time that something could theoretically happen. At that point, should the husband choose to do so, he may bring her to the Mishkan, to the Kohen, and put her through a process by which she drinks these waters from the kior, and these waters, with some sort of divinely inspired power, determine if she is innocent or guilty. Now, I want to stress upon you, this isn't a husband who's just jealous. This isn't just someone who's having a spat. There is reason for him to assume this of his wife. She's been warned specific person. It's one specific person. If she goes into that room with somebody else, no matter how long she stays in there, she doesn't drink the waters. If she comes out and she says, she tells him that she was unfaithful to him, she doesn't drink the waters. They get divorced, but she doesn't drink the waters.
Wait a minute. She drinks the water anyway, no?
No.
She drinks it and she dies?
No. Only very specific situation.
Oh, okay.
If he tells her about a specific person and she goes in with that person and keeps quiet about it, and they're in for a particular amount of time, if they're in and out in 2 minutes, nothing happens. She doesn't drink the water. If she goes in with someone else, she doesn't drink the water. If she was never warned, if her husband never warned her in front of witnesses, if he, even if he warned her in front of one witness instead of two witnesses, they can't make her drink the water. It's a very, very specific situation.
Do they do that now?
No.
Never.
We don't have the mishkan
anymore. Yeah, right. We don't have.
We don't have that connection to God. In fact, we're told, Chazal tell us, not Chazal. I think it was the either Rambam or Ramban, I don't remember which one said it, said that once these kinds of things became so prevalent, once we became so used to sinning and so insensitive to the sanctity of marriage, we lost the privilege of a husband knowing for sure. Of being able to that the reason that it was there was to save lives, because a husband in his rage could kill his wife, who could theoretically kill his wife if he suggests of doing something like that in his rage.
Murders that go on between couples.
Right, exactly. So he could theoretically, so this is an outlet for him so that he knows for sure.
Yeah.
So that's how it is. So Rashi continues here. That water that she drinks in that situation is coming from the Kiyor. What's the significance of it? Shehu lashum shalom ben ish leishto. That the purpose of the waters of the Kiyor is to make peace between man and his wife. Lahashkot imayim shebetocho. By giving her to drink from the water that's inside. Shehu lemisha kinela ba'ala ben ishtara. I don't like the English translation here, because kine, Rashi himself translates the word kine not as being jealous later on in the Isha Sota section. But he says to someone who has mourned her, he translates the word kine not as jealousy, but as one who has mourned his wife in front of two witnesses, not to be with a specific man, and she was, when it's Tara, and they were in that alone. The Tehdalacha, and you have proof, Shehei Mar'ot Mamash, and how do you know that they're really mirrors, and it describes, you know, later on from the description of the cure somewhere else. But the point is that this is such an appropriate, everything fits together so nicely. They brought these mirrors. Where are these mirrors coming from? These mirrors are coming from the mirrors that they use in Mitzrayim. So in order to ensure the future of the Jewish people, with terrible self-sacrifice, they were risking their lives, they were risking rejection from their husbands were exhausted, and they risked a lot to ensure the future of Am Yisrael, and those mirrors that they used to seduce their husbands were then put onto this Kiyor, who one of its functions is to ensure the connection between the husband and wife. That's situation number three. So far we have three examples of things that the women of that generation did that were very strong. Number one, what they did in Mitzrayim. Number two, what they did at Chet HaEgel. And number three here, with giving up their mirrors, which also echoes what they did back in Mitzrayim. Let's move to number four, what they did, not as a group, but as specific individual women. I just want to focus for a moment on individual women in source number nine. I'm starting from the sixth or seventh line from the end of the first row. Amar Rav. I want to point something out to you before we get there. This will make it a lot easier. Look in the beginning of Parshat Korach, page 820 and 821. The leaders of the Korach rebellion are listed right in the first pasuk. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi. Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi took, together with Zatan, Aviram, B'nai Eliab, the Own, Ben Pelet, B'nai Reuben. So there are four people who are the leaders. We have Korach, we have Zatan, Aviram, and Own. Zatan and Aviram being brothers. These are the four leaders. If you look further on in the entire rest of the story of Korach, one of these people never shows up again. Three of them are mentioned repeatedly by name, Korach, Zatan, and Aviram. Zatan and Aviram are swallowed up, and Korach also were swallowed up by the earth. And Om Ben Pelet never again appears. And you might ask the question, what happened to Om? And he answers in source number 9. Rav answers, Amar Rav. Om Ben Pelet ishto hikyoto. Om Ben Pelet's wife saved him. Amrale, she said to him, my nachalach nina, what's the difference to you? Imar Rabba and Talmida, the Imar Rabba and Talmida. She said to him, you know, who's fighting here? It's Korach versus Moshe. If Korach wins, you're still a subordinate. And if Moshe wins, you're still a subordinate. You're not going to be in charge of anything. It's really between the two of them. Why are you bothering, involving yourself? You gain nothing. He says, Sir Amala, my Abed, what am I supposed to do now? Havai Be'etza, give me an idea, Vishabai Libahadayu, because I already swore my allegiance to these people. Amrale, she said to him, Yadana, we know, Jekula Kenishta Kadishta Ninhu, that this group is entirely a group of holy people, because the Torah itself says, Dechtivki Kolei Dakulam Kedoshim. Korach himself, when he comes to Moshe, one of his complaints is, we are all a holy people. In other words, why are you elevating yourself above everybody else? So she said, okay, if they're so holy, the Jews, that's our advantage. Amale, she says to him, Tum, da'ana matzila nalach. Sit down, I will save you. Ashkite chamra, she gives him wine to drink, alcohol, barvite vag, agnite gavai, and she lay him down and she covered him with a cover. Utva albava, she sat at the entrance of the tent, vishtarta limaze, she uncovered her hair. Called atachaze hadar. Anyone who saw her, came by and saw her, went away. In other words, when they came to call him to say, it's time for us to go against Moshe, they see her sitting in the opening of her tent with her hair uncovered, and they run away. This midrash always fascinated me for two reasons. I always thought, it always fascinated me for one reason, and then today I thought of another thing that makes me less fascinated with it. I was always so fascinated with it because here we think of like Korach as this horrible rebel who's so anti-Moshe and so anti-everything. So anti-everything that he was so careful with the mitzvah of hair covering? Of all things? Like, that amazed me that here he was so much firmer than we thought he was. But another thing I thought of today was, okay, they're so focused on the externals. What about the internals? What about the Kavod for Moshe? What about the concept that we're all under Hashem? That there's more than just the external mitzvot, that the external mitzvot are important, of course, also, but the internal mitzvot is something that they seem to totally lose. So those are the two sides that I've sort of been thinking about and struggling with, but it's a very interesting midrash. The Gemara goes on to continue to contrast Ohn Ben Pelet's life with Korach's life. Korach's life encourages
her from everything.
Well, he gets swallowed up. The Torah tells us later on that he gets swallowed up. He gets killed at this right here.
Yeah.
So there you go. So here we have an individual woman who used her strength and her commitment to mitzvot to ensure her husband's safety and to ensure her husband's future. It could be maybe she also knew that there's no way Korach was going to win, although she would never say that to him. You're betting on a losing horse.
So behind every man,
no, but I mean, probably, like, for them, because everybody, you know, covering your hair was a standard
right.
that everybody did. It would be like
even single
if somebody
women
came
it.
To
sure.
our house and we took off our top or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. It was very, right, but also. Okay. Between us. Okay. We're going to go to number five, to our fifth situation of women, example of women. And this, I have to tell you, takes the cake. Okay. We're looking, for this one, we're going to look inside on page 886 and 887. Okay, let me just tell you what happens on our previously scheduled program, the chapter immediately before. The Jewish people are getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. And God says, okay, here's how you're going to divide up the land. You're going to do a lottery. And it lists all the families from every Shevet so that we know who's who and who's where so we can draw this lottery. And the beginning of Parashat Zion, something happens. But Tikravna benot Shalachad ben Chesar ben Gilad ben Meshir ben Menashe lemishpachot Menashe ben Yosef ve'ilishmot notah macha noah v'chagra melkah v'tirtah. Shalachad was this guy who was from Shevet Manasseh who had five daughters. Their names were Machla, Noah, Chagla, Milcah, Tirzah. I've heard of people using two of these. I know people named Noah and
Tirzah. Is this
Tirza,
the one
where
the daughters talk about
in here? Yes. But Tahamoma was named Moshe, Lubnei, Elazar, HaKohen, Blaznei, Nishim, Behol, HaYidah, Pesach, HaMoed, Imor. Imagine the scene. They come before Moshe, not just to Moshe, but come before Moshe, and Aaron and all of the Nephilim, all of the princes and all of the Edom, the whole crowd, everyone's there waiting to find out where their land is going to be. Everyone's standing there being counted, inviting all the families down and everything, and they come up to the front. Imagine the pressure here, you know.
And they were very
And they say, Avinu Meit Bamidbar, our father died in the Midbar. V'hu lo haya mitoch ha'edah ha'no'adim al Hashem ba'adah korach. But you have to understand, he said, he wasn't from Korach. He died from a different sin, but I want you to know that he wasn't from Korach. And most people say, what sin did he die? They say in the end that it could be that he was the blasphemer, or he was the, does it say down here? That he was the, it doesn't say. He did something else, or he could have been the one who was gathering treason, whatever. He died from another chiv, and he, big deal, he wasn't from Korach. Lama yigala shem avinu mitoch mishpachto. He ain't no ben. Why should my father's name disappear off the face of the earth just because he has no sons? This addresses what you raised a few weeks ago, actually. Tana lanu achuzah b'toch achei avinu. Give us a plot among our father's brothers. Ve'akrei Moshe mishpatan lifnei Hashem. Moshe didn't have an answer for them. So he turns around to Hashem and says, Hashem, what are we going to do? Maybe you have a point. It's not from the Parshan said. The Parshan said that the halacha eluded him, that escaped him.
Really?
This is one of those situations. Vayom Hashem el Moshe leimor. Hashem says to Moshe, Kein benot shalach hadovot. They are speaking right, these women. That tone to tein lahem achuzat nachala b'tocha chayavihem. Give them a part of lands among their father's brothers. Behavarta nachala avihem lahem. Give their father's portion to them. And tell B'nai Shal that this is the rule from now on. If a man dies without any sons, his daughters get
the land. No matter. It was his sin, the father's sin. It had nothing to do with the girls.
Nothing to, yes.
With these five daughters.
Yes.
Rina, yeah. Why is there a bold nun?
So that's a question that is often asked by the Mepharshim. Yeah. Why is there a bold nun? And some of the ways that they answer, should I bring this to you here? No. Some of the things is that the mitzvah is coming through their zechut, but that's a big deal. The mitzvah isn't said just by itself, just for Moshe, that because these women have such a strong feeling about the mitzvah, they have the zechut, you know, to have the mitzvah, yeah, said through them. But I want to, for a minute, before I raise the issue that I'm about to raise, just turn back one page before. When all these people are listed, and you have verse 64, 63, these are the ones counted by Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen, who counted the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan near Jericho. And of these, there was no man of those counted by Moshe and Aaron the Kohen who counted the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. The Jewish people were counted as right after Matan Torah, right after the Torah was given. In other words, before they were decreed that it was decreed that they would all die in the Midbar. So of these people who are being counted now, says the Torah, and the word the Torah uses is Ish. There is no Ish. Be'ela lo haya Ish. There is no man from when Moshe and Aaron counted them before. But now Moshe and Elijah, who's Aaron's son, are counting them. Nobody among these people were there before, except for Caleb and Yehoshua, those two people. But all those other people died. And Rashi says, Be'ela lo haya Ish. There maybe was no man. Source number 10, Aval Al-Hanashim lo nigzarag zeret hamarazim. The women didn't get the same decree that the men did because of the sin of the spies. The women didn't get death decreed upon them.
But the women said, don't send the spies.
Says him.
I thought the women were against them sending the spies. No?
I don't know anything. I've never encountered anything that said that. You could be confusing it with the Chehaegel. You could be right. He says, why? Because they loved the land. The men say, they were the ones who said, let's make a leader and go back to Mitzrayim. Who needs this? And the women said, what did the women say? Right here, what did Benot Shalafa say? Give us a piece of land. We want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Because he asked the question, how come the Benot Shalacha is written right next to the counting of the Bnei Yisrael? It doesn't make any sense. So he says that this is the reason, to show that it wasn't the women who died. The women had a strong love for the land. The women understood the future of Am Yisrael, the future of the Jewish people, was in Eretz Yisrael. And I want to end with what we started with. Hallie Silva says to me all the time, says, you know, Bishkut Nashim Tzidkaniyot, anytime you talk about it, it's hard to make Aliyah, it's hard to go to Israel. So it finishes, says, you know, Bishkut Nashim Tzidkaniyot, it's all because of the women. The women are the ones who understand where the future of Am Yisrael is. We saw here the women understood that the future of Am Yisrael was to keep going on in face of adversity, and realize also that the place of Am Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael, and that that is the future of everyone. So, there you go. So, Chag Sameach. Enjoy your cheesecake.